Ummer, who plays kind of co-lead against Annie, he lives in Margate, so we're going to shoot in his house because it's free, and that means that we're setting the movie in Margate, which means we should look around. What's in Margate? Oh, there's an abandoned theme park. Well, definitely we should make a scene that takes place in the abandoned theme park. That's how we build these movies out.
Hello and welcome to the Dan and Joe Film Show, episode 61. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got an exciting show coming up for you all, and I hope you're all doing good wherever you're listening to. As always, I'm joined by my partner in crime. He really is the top gun, and the things we could do with a dash cam together, I tell you what, folks. You have to see it to believe it. It's the one and only Joe Richards. Hello.
Oh, the dash cam bit. What would we do? What would we get up to with a dash cam, do you think, Dan?
Oh, I think it's going to stay locked in my mind. That's what's going to happen. I think I reminisce every night.
I think we could make a masterpiece. If just give us a camera.
Yeah.
And let us, run wild. Just some film studio. Give us the budget, the money.
I agree. All I can say is Cannes 2023, all right? I can imagine us premiering our film, nothing but a Samsung flip phone we filmed it on, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's up on their feet. Forget a 12-minute standing ovation. We're talking about a 35-minute standing ovation. I mean, people are weak at the knees. Even those in wheelchairs were like, come on, people stand up, come on.
The wheelchairs. People in wheelchairs have just suddenly had the power of Christ within them, and they get up because our film is so powerful. I mean, I recently went away and I did a black and white edition of my photographs in Santorini because when I was away in Santorini, I mean, it was giving me Mexico vibes. And I thought, I liked taking photos of like the unseen places. And I put these photos up, black and white, very arty. And lo and behold, who's the first person to comment? You, saying Bong John Ho. It's like watching a Bong John Ho movie. And I said, Bong John Joe. So maybe we can take that, use those sort of images, that sort of style, and apply it to a feature-length film, take it to Cannes. I think the next Daniels, the next Everything Everywhere All at Once, we're that team.
Absolutely, yeah, Bong Joon-cho, I can see it now in flashing lights. 5 stars, even from Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian.
Oh, that that's would how be good a it will rare. Be.
We will have to be Bong Joon-ho for that. Those photos were very artistic and very edgy. I love them a lot. I thought they really showed the really neutral colour of you. They really did.
And dear listeners, I can tell you right now by Dan's face, he is completely lying.
Yeah. Listeners, life is not black and white, okay? It's not black and white. Let's not fool them. But it did look lovely. Speaking of that, you obviously had a lovely holiday away and lots has happened since our last show. One of which, I know it's a little bit outdated now, but Eurovision, UK coming in second place, which I'm still kind of not over. I'm still in a bit of like a post-traumatic stress disorder type of situation where I'm a bit like, what just happened? And as it was happening, because we did a Eurovision party together, which was so much fun. And I still believe that was a good luck charm for the entire of the UK.
Yes.
But as we were watching it, I had to like pinch myself repeatedly because it didn't seem real that we had done so well.
I know, like that whole evening, couldn't have asked for a better year to throw a Eurovision party.
Totally.
Because just the atmosphere, I mean, I'm not into sports, that's no big surprise, but it was like being in like an FA Cup final, you know, with your team like about to score, you know, a final goal. It was incredible. And it was funny because I met up with my brother afterwards and he was saying about the night and he was saying it was just crazy how the atmosphere changed in that room and how like even the most, you know, sort of disgruntled like Eurovision fan, I'm not interested, was like so into it. It was extraordinary. And definitely like properly in shock. And it was great because obviously before the night, there was all this buzz about him and his song, and they're like, oh, you know, he's gonna do really well. And it was just great that it actually happened. And I think everybody sort of judged and guessed that Ukraine was going to win. But I'm excited because next year it could be in London. I mean, Ukraine can't host. And I think it should, by right, go to the second person. And if it's in London, buddy, we're hitting that Eurovision, you know, village. It's going to be amazing.
I mean, if that happens, this year's party was simply an entree. I mean, that is going to be the main cause. That is going to get messy. And I'm with you. I mean, I turned to your mum at the start of the night, and I was like, nil pois? And she looked at me, she said, nil pois? And I went as far to bet a lot of money on it, which we're not going to talk about.
Oh, that was so
funny.
Thankfully,
they didn't win. But, you know, who knows? Like you said, next year they might be hosting and it's exciting. But I did have a whole bottle of wine ready to go. I was like, well, it's going to be a nil pois night. Let's just get on it early. But but yeah, I was well done, Sam Ryder. You know, he's brilliant.
Yeah, well done. And let's hope that it's a start of something really good. And I think a lot of people have said that this year we finally sort of understood the assignment. And I think let's just carry that on now. Let's make sure that next year's entry is just as good, similar sort of style, ticks all those boxes, and that's, you know, start getting back into it, you know, because I mean, we hadn't won since the 90s. So lovely night. Great to see you and Amelia. Everybody was really involved. Like I said, I couldn't have asked for a better Eurovision. So yeah, roll on 2023 in London.
And another little bit of history happening this week is it is the Queen's Jubilee, which is very exciting. 70 years as our monarch. God save the Queen. And lots of street parties. I felt for 2 seconds there like a royal correspondent on BBC News then.
You looked it as well.
Thank you so much. But a lot of street parties happening this week. Are you going to be doing anything exciting, Joe, for the Queen's Jubilee?
Yes, so I am going to be in London. I'm going to be going to Buckingham Palace, standing outside and waving a flag. Not doing that at all. I'm going to London, but I'm seeing the Killers.
No!
Shock
horror.
Yes, they are playing the Emirates, long overdue. What was crazy, because it's, the other day I was like, oh, I better check tickets, because this is a gig which has been postponed so many times. I booked these tickets November 2019.
Wow, that feels like 10 years ago.
I mean, right? I was like in shock. I was like, I was stressing out because it was so long ago. I couldn't find like the email confirmation. And like, yeah, it's just crazy with COVID and everything like that. Like this week I'm going to go see Drag Race, which I bought Hannah for a Christmas present 2 years ago. It's so strange that we're finally getting to that point where like all these events are happening, which should have happened 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. But what are you doing? Are you going to have a street party? You're going to do, I think you're going to do like scones, like afternoon tea.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I'm all about the scones life or the scone. but for me, I always put the cream on first. But I know some people like the jam on first. But there's a bit of contention there. But I will be having afternoon tea with my little teapot. I'll be dressed as Prince Charles. And I'll be going, oh, great to see you. Hello. Yeah, Queen. Yes. Yeah. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I mean, I'm looking forward to the concerts and all the performances. Apparently, Craig David is performing. We'll see what that's like.
Well, I would expect nothing less, you know, Craig David.
Yeah.
Classic.
Do you think we like took her to the Jubilee on Tuesday?
The Queen loves it.
On Wednesday. She does, yeah. She'd be like, yes, Craig, come on.
Yeah, she does. She's a big fan. She requested him personally, no doubt.
Oh, excellent. We'll have a lovely time, however you're celebrating the Jubilee. But moving from the Jubilee now, shall we talk movies, Joe?
I think we should, because otherwise, you know, this is turning into a Eurovision / Jubilee show. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And the first film we're going to talk about is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. They are back, everybody. I know many people online have been really kind of hateful on Twitter, asking, claiming for these two duos to come back. I mean, Joe, name a more iconic duo. I'll wait.
I just can't think. I mean, you've got Ant and Dec.
Yeah.
I would definitely say they're
Phil and Holly.
Phil and Holly. Yeah. Quite a few.
I can think of a
Chuckle
few.
Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually think of a long list, really, but there we are.
Yeah.
So this is 30 years after their popular television show ended. We have Chipmunks Chip and Dale, who are played by Andy Samberg and John Mulaney, who you might know from various other films and TV series in America. So Chip and Dale are back. They're living very different lives. Dale has gone and got CGI surgery, whereas Chip has kind of stuck to the 2D animation. However, when one of the cast members of their original show mysteriously disappears, the pair must reunite to save their friend. Here's a clip.
So, what's been up with you?
Oh, you know, this, that, other vague things to fill the space of this conversation.
Okay, well, you look the same.
Yeah, thanks. And you look different.
Hey, it's no secret I had the CGI surgery done, and it's done wonders rejuvenating my career. I'm actually starring in a play tonight. But man, I tell you, the real hot ticket is Rescue Rangers. There's even some buzz about a reboot. Someone started a Facebook fan page for it and everything.
Crikey, a Facebook fan page? I don't just give those away.
Oh, he's full of it, Monty. No one's talking about a Rescue Rangers reboot except for him.
What? The fans are hungry for it.
Look, I came here to help Monty, not get caught up in some Hollywood nonsense. So, great to take this skip down memory lane, but I've gotta go. Monty, if you're really in trouble, you know how to find me. Dale, you were also here.
And that was a clip there from Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Now, I saw this only last night. I know it's been out for a little while. First off, I'd heard great things about it. Really great reception. From the trailer, I didn't know what to expect. It looked very meta. It looked like they're very satirical, a lot of references to Disney franchises, to Fox franchises, because Disney has now become like a mega corporation where they own so much that you can, you know, use so many iconic characters in your films. And this film definitely does that. I had a lot of fun with this, I've got to say. I didn't love it as much as the reviews have been saying, but I did have a really good time with it. I think Andy Samberg is hilarious. I've always found him funny. If you've ever seen Popstar, Stop Never Stopping, great. He's always been really great at kind of parodies, satirical humor. That's kind of his thing. John Mulaney as well. I think the two of them work really well. They have great chemistry. And this kind of bitter feud between Chip and Dale works really well. The fact that Dale kind of took this job offer for 00 Dale and left Chip alone, and they've kind of had to come back together. So I thought the two of them worked really, really well. I think my main issue, I guess, with the film is it kind of falls down the middle between not being as lighthearted enough for children to really find funny, but then also not adult and risky and crude for adults to find funny. It kind of falls down the middle for me, where there were moments where I kind of was stopping and thinking, okay, well, that's really funny, but I don't know who the audience for that is. I don't know who would laugh at that. Because like I said, there's some jokes in here that I think are definitely for the adults that they'd understand. There's a lot of meta humor here, but I just don't know whether kids are going to be like fully embracing it as much as films like Sing 2 and Sonic, which I think is definitely pitched better towards that age bracket. But I do think there is something here for the Disney fans. Maybe not for fans of Peter Pan. I'm not going to say too much about that. You know, you will see Disney characters as you've never seen them before. And it did remind me a lot of Happy Time Murders. You know, that film with Mr. McCarthy where they kind of we're changing how we viewed the Muppets. But overall, I had a really fun time with this. I think it fits really nicely on Disney Plus. I can't say I was ever, you know, shouting at the screen thinking, I want to see this on the big screen. I think it suits really nicely. Some great performances, nice use of CGI. It has a good pacing to it. And I think it flips between genres quite well. So there's detective storylines here. There's some kind of Mission Impossible 007 style sequences as well. And genuinely, I think the plot works really well. And I was kind of guessing a lot of the time, or who's in charge? Is it him? Is it her? So I think it works really well as a kind of a detective noir story, you know, in a way. But yeah, I had fun with this. I don't think it's something at the end of the year I'm going to be like, oh, it was amazing, or like a highlight. But I had a lot of fun with it. And I think fans of Chip and Dale will too. What do you think, Joe?
So again, like you said, the reviews have been incredible for this. And I am old enough to remember watching Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers when it was on the television originally, which I know is a massive shock for you, Dan. Oh. But I think my main sort of takeaway from this in the first instance was, first of all, how did Disney let the filmmakers get away with this, because and I think that's what I was most impressed by with this film, is that, like you said, it does show Disney characters in a very different light. It is, you know, very meta. There's no character which is off limits. I mean, there were so many cameos in this that literally there were points where I had to rewind, because I'd be watching it and I'd be like, oh, there's so-and-so. And I'd be like, well, and I'd rewind just to have a look, because there's so much going on in the background of this world. You know, we've got Dobby in a Gucci poster and so on and so forth. So I just couldn't believe about, you know, how much they got away with and which characters, the sheer amount of characters that they had involved in this. Because Disney, yes, you are absolutely right, is a mega corporation, but there's still characters in this which I was like, how did they get the rights for these characters? And yeah, I just loved some of the little gags that are all through it. There's, I won't spoil it because, you know, so much of this film has already been spoiled online, but there is a play on Batman versus Superman. And I was in tears. I was crying, laughing at what they did with that concept. So yeah, if you're a fan of animation, a fan of the original, I think you're going to find a lot to really love here, because there is just so much going on. It pays tribute to characters new and old, some of which will probably not play well for younger audiences. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, the demographic, sometimes you do have to think, who is this aimed for? You know, is my 9-year-old nephew going to know who Scrooge McDuck is? Probably not. But then again, I do. And I really loved it for that. So I think really great concept. I love the fact that they took an idea, a property, decided not to go down the usual route of just doing a reboot, having like a generic adventure with these characters. I like that they tried doing something different. I like that they had free reign, and you can really tell that there is a creative force behind this and not just loads of different voices sort of going, you know, we want to do this and that. I loved all that. It's funny you mentioned the Happy Time Murders, because it did remind me of sort of the very best Muppet movies, really. You know, with which have got, like, the Muppets are renowned for having the cameos, the color. I loved the blending of the different animation styles. All it was missing was maybe a few more musical numbers, but I think the voice cast are terrific, colorful. If you're a fan of film, animation, you know, all that stuff, you're going to find a lot, I think, to enjoy within this. So yeah, I had a really good time. Like I said, perfect for Disney Plus. I don't know if it would have played as well as a cinematic release, but I had a blast with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do reference Alvin and the Chipmunks, which I was like, I quite liked that. They were kind of shady towards it. I was great. They were
very shady. And, you know, they had like this stuff about, like, you know, rap. Every cartoon needs to have like a rap in it or whatever these days. Like I said, I loved all the meta stuff. So I thought it was a lot of fun.
Brilliant. Moving on now to something you can see on the big screen. That's right. Tom Cruise. He's back, baby.
He is back.
He's back, looking better than ever. Mwah, mwah. I mean, the guy does not age. I want to know his secret. I think I know what it is, and I actually don't want to know more about it. But here is, we've got Top Gun Maverick. This is the long-awaited sequel. Again, I think it's one of those films from about 3 years ago that just seemed to be delayed and delayed and delayed, and we were never going to see it coming. I haven't been able to see it yet, but I'm excited to watch it. Joe, you have. So tell us about Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, so Top Gun Maverick, a sequel to the 1986 hit, 36 years in the making, look. Directed by Joseph Kosinski, who Cruise previously worked with on that very popular hit, Oblivion, which I quite liked, actually, but I don't think it, you know, did crazy money. Tom Cruise is back as Maverick, and we find him at the beginning of the film testing all the new gear in the desert. So he's testing all these new fighter jets in the desert. And he's the same old Maverick. He's cocky. He's insubordinate. He doesn't listen. You know, he does what he thinks is best. And as a result of that, we quickly find out that he's never progressed in all these years in his career. He's a captain. He has been for years and years and years. He seems to think he's exactly where he needs to be, although people around him have said, you know, you should be, you know, a general or whatever at this stage in his career. Nevertheless, he is called back to Top Gun training school, where he is tasked with training a new batch of fighter pilots for a really deadly mission, one of which is Rooster, played by Miles Teller, who happens to be the son of Maverick's previous wingman, Goose. Here's a clip.
Your instructor is one of the finest pilots this program has ever produced. What he has to teach you may very well mean the difference between life and death. His exploits are legendary.
I have to admit, I wasn't expecting an invitation back.
They're called orders, Maverick.
So that's a clip there from Top Gun Maverick. And as I said, at the beginning of the film, you have this sequence with Tom Cruise in the desert. And he's going to take out this new fighter plane for a test run. And they've hit Mach 9. And the goal is to hit Mach 10. And this project is going to be basically cut short. It's going to be abandoned because they're spending too much money on it and whatnot, unless they can hit Mach 10. So they say, Maverick, we're grounded. You know, you gotta stay put. And Tom Cruise sort of looks at the camera and he goes, they want Mach 10? We'll give them Mach 10. And it's like he's going to the audience going, you want a Mach 10 blockbuster? Well, be prepared because you're going to get it. And then what follows very shortly after is this amazing sequence where he's like trying to break, you know, the Mach 10 barrier. And from there on in, it is just a visual just delight. It's just a thrill ride of a blockbuster. And there's been a lot in the press about Tom Cruise. I do feel like you're in that camp. You're either in the camp where you love him or you hate him. I don't think there's much in between with Tom Cruise. I think the guy is incredible. I think what I love about him is he's just so clearly passionate about the cinematic experience. He just puts everything, all of him, into these films and just making the most thrilling movies possible. And this is about as biggest and loudest of a cinema experience that you can get. You need to go see it in IMAX. You need to go see it in Super Screen. You need to go see it on 4DX, I imagine would be a hell of a lot of fun. Go see it on the loudest screen possible, because I genuinely think if you watch this for the first time on a TV, don't know if it would play as well as it does on the big screen. You feel like you're in the fighter jets with the pilots. You feel like you're in a roller coaster ride, which is probably why the 4DX would be a lot of fun. Yeah. It has like loads of thrills, spills, and it's bolstered with these amazing like practical effects and like practical like set pieces, which just blow you away. And I think I've got nothing against. I mean, I love a superhero movie as much as the next guy. But all these superhero movies, I do think there is an argument to be made. I mean, they're mostly filmed in front of a green screen. Mm. So it's so refreshing to have a film where you can feel that this is all real and this is all going on in real life. And it just adds to the whole experience. It has Bags of Heart as well. I think if you're a fan of the original, and I'm not, if you're a fan of the original, I think it will really hit you in the feels. What they do with Val Kilmer's character in particular is just terrific. And, you know, obviously Val Kilmer, very sad that he doesn't act as much anymore because of obviously his real life battle with throat cancer and everything like that. So that was really touching. And it works from that perspective of the father-son relationship between Maverick and Rooster. And I really enjoyed that aspect about it. The only downside... The only downside, and bear in mind, you know, everyone's been given this 5. I gave it a 4. Jennifer Connelly. I think she's great. I genuinely think she's great. And she does nothing wrong in this film, okay? It's not on her at all.
It's not your fault, Jennifer. It's us.
Definitely not. But that whole romance that she has with Tom Cruise, not necessary at all. I feel like it really pulled. And I feel like the film, for me, at its heart, is that story about Maverick and Rooster and about letting go of the past and about dealing with obviously the consequences and the death in the original film. And I think that's more than enough, for to like dig into and have that being the backbone of this movie. Obviously, I appreciate that the original Top Gun movie, you know, it did have that romantic element. You know, you had take my breath away. You know, you had all that. And I get that, you know, you want to sort of have that element, I guess, but it just didn't work for me. And especially because it has no connection to the first film, you know, she's not in the first film. So just introducing a new love interest who he's got a history with, it just didn't really work for me at all. And I felt that those moments sort of dragged it down a little bit. And I wish they put maybe more of an emphasis away from that. Otherwise, though, I mean, I can't complain. It is outstanding. As I said, I'm not a fan of the first film, like at all, but I just loved this. I just thought it was exhilarating. And it gets the summer movie season off to a storming start. I think it will. We recently went on Rachel's show, Rachel Wagner. Yeah. I predicted that it will do crazy money, and I really hope that it does. The reviews have been incredible. So if you're a fan of the first one, or even if you're not, go see it. It's Tom Cruise, big budget spectacle, and get there early for the Mission Impossible trailer, because is incredible as well. So really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. Summer's off to a good start.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Excited for that trailer. I have seen the Mission Impossible trailer, but I saw it on my iPhone, which is not the best thing to watch it.
Yeah.
So I look forward to that. But maybe let's love more fighter jets is what you're saying. I like that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a lover, not a fighter. But still, you know, that's at least make the romance, relevant. But yeah, not for me.
Yeah, I mean, at least that get your top off a little bit, you know, just have a little kerfuffle in the bed. Come on, at least give us that. We want that.
We want a bit of that, don't
we're
we?
Men.
We're innocent just men.
We're innocent men. Excellent. Well, Top Gun Maverick is in cinemas now, so go and check it out. Moving on now to something very exciting. We have an interview now with director Rob Savage. He talks all about his brand new found footage style horror film, Dashcam. We were big, big fans of his first film, Host. It came out in 2020, set during COVID and the lockdown. So he chatted to us about this latest project, about the cast, the filming of it, and any challenges that he faced. Here we go.
If you're trying to steal one of my kidneys, I wouldn't bother because those things barely work.
Listen, I just need you to take my friend somewhere nearby. The usual guy let us down. It won't take long.
Yeah, people do that, let you down.
Listen, it needs to stay between us, okay? I'll pay you extra, but don't mention not a word to anybody, okay? Promise?
I promise, yeah. Okay,
she's sleeping. I'll just be
totally.
Angela. Angela, sweetheart. Good girl. Okay, you can. Okay, Angela, this lady's gonna just take you to some friends, okay?
Nope.
Wait. I'm just texting you. Wait a minute, please.
No, lady.
Look, please. Look, I really need you to do this for me.
What is this? Some human trafficking shit?
She's not safe here.
No,
please.
Shit. It'll
take you half an hour at most, please.
No.
Look, wait, stop. Look.
Hey.
You know, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm actually a really good person. So lean against the car for a second. I just gotta get my key out here. All right, welcome to the band car, Angela. It's your first ride. Put her little feeders in there. Oh, great, good girl.
That was a clip there from the terrifying dash cam due out in cinemas this Friday, June the 3rd. And we're very lucky to be joined by the director of dash cam and host, Rob Savage. Rob, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for joining us. Rob, obviously, we've seen dash cam. We were lucky enough to grab a screener of it. As I said, absolutely terrifying. But before we get on to Dashcam, we just want to rewind a little bit and talk about Host, which again, we reviewed on our show back in 2020. Let's start by talking about Host. That had an incredible reaction, right? I mean, so much so that it ended up playing in cinemas, making the leap from streaming to cinemas. Did you expect that reaction? How did that feel?
It was very surreal. Well, because when it did find that level of success, we were still living in the first lockdown, and everything was kind of virtual, you know. So the success of Host amounted to our inboxes blowing up and our Twitter blowing up, but very little kind of like face-to-face interaction. And it wasn't until it got a cinema run, like you said, and we were able to go out for Halloween and do some screenings and see it with an audience, that it kind of suddenly felt real. The real life impact of Host, for me at least, is that we were able to immediately go ahead and make the next movie, that we got some choice in the next movie, that people were excited about what the next movie is, because nobody had really been paying attention before that.
Mm. And was dash cam always sort of the next dream project, or did that come, you know, after Host, and you had the option of sort of doing what you wanted? I mean, did you have dash cam in your head from the off, or?
I never really think of film of the films that I make in terms of like, what do I want to do next? What's the dream project? It's more just like, what are the, I look at the conditions and I say that, you know, it feels like conditions are right to make this movie. And Dashcam was something that me and Jed had written a treatment for pre-pandemic in 2018, 2019, whenever it was. And we were just looking, you know, I wanted to do something with the team of Host immediately after Host, because we were all kind of high off the success of it, and I wanted to just dive into something else again, and I wanted to kind of take what we'd learned from Host and try and do something a bit different with it. So we looked at Dashcam. We thought, oh well, this is, you know, it's a fan footage movie, and it's got this theme of an anarchic character picking up an old lady, which obviously with COVID that has all these different connotations now, and somehow now more relevant, more interesting. So it felt like conditions were right for that movie. Blumhouse kind of came on, and I made this deal with them to make a few movies for them. And, you know, it's part of that agreement was the budgets would be super low, but we'd get the control that we had on Host. So we didn't have very much money, but we did have what we'd learned from Host, which is like how to get a very little money and resources onto the screen in a kind of effective way. So making a fan footage movie felt like the natural next step, because it meant that even though our budget only increased that tiniest little bit, it meant that we could put all that money up on screen. So for a number of reasons, it felt like Dashcam was just a fun, different thing to jump into.
No, absolutely. And it is a lot of fun. It is a wild ride, to say the least. I did not know what to expect throughout it. When I thought I had it pegged down, it just changed completely. How would you describe dash cam to people without giving too much away? Because I think that's part of the brilliance of it, going not knowing much. How would you describe it to people?
I'd say dash cam is, in all the ways that Host was subtle and restrained and considered, dash cam is loud and obnoxious and abrasive It's very much a kind of, you know, it's a kind of boisterous slasher splatter movie, whereas Host was much more of a Paranormal Activity style whispered voices movie. This is a yelling, screaming, shouting, all capital letters movie.
It's very punk rock, actually, now you've said it. It's very punk rock. And speaking of punk rock, you've got the lead who you've mentioned previously, Annie Hardy, played by the real life Annie Hardy from rock band Giant Drag. who is a character unlike any other I think I've seen in quite a long time. Tell us about how you came to get Annie Hardy on board, and how much of Annie Hardy in this film is the real Annie Hardy?
Well, there are touch points between both the character of Annie Hardy and the real Annie Hardy. You know, the main one being that this show, Band Car, that the movie is based around, is a real show that she does. She drives around LA taking comments from people on her live stream and improvises music as she drives around. And she's incredible at it. And so that was really the jumping off point for this movie. It was Jed, one of the co-writers, produces her podcast and showed me Band Car, her show. And I was like, that's such an incredible setup for a horror movie, for a fan footage movie. And really, you know, Annie's involvement was essential because this is an improvised movie. You know, we had, just like Host was an improvised movie, we had an outline, but it would change day by day. It was just a bunch of us off in the forest in the middle of Norfolk with no scripted dialogue, improvising scene after scene, and figuring out things as we went along. And so I knew that I needed somebody who could pull that off. And Annie's got such a spontaneous wit, and her brain is just like unlike anyone else, that, you know, from watching a few episodes of Band Car, it's like, oh, well, she's going to carry us when we go into production with only this, you know, these few pages of bullet points. She's going to be the person I'm relying on day after day. And she, you know, she didn't disappoint.
And as you said, with dash cam, very much, you know, independent filmmaking. I just want to ask, you know, what tips and advice is sort of that age old question. I mean, what you've achieved with your last two films has been incredible, considering everything, you know, especially COVID. What advice would you give to any sort of filmmakers listening who've always thought, you know, I'd love to make a film like Host? What advice would you give them?
The only advice that I ever feel comfortable giving is that you should not sit around and wait for the ideal circumstances to come along, because they don't exist. It's never the ideal time to make a movie. You've got to instead try and look at the resources you have available to you, however meager they might be, and make the movie that you can make right this second. You know, look at the people who will help you out, and the locations that you can get for free, and the camera that you can get for free, and base the film around that. You know, every time my career has taken a leap forward, it's been because I've kind of looked around at a situation that is somewhat compromised, so like the lockdown and having to shoot a film remotely. And I've kind of huddled with my collaborators and said, right, what can we do? What can we do under these circumstances? And on both Host and Dashcam, the way that we put these films together is we had the outline. We kind of knew roughly what the shape of it was. And rather than squirreling away and spending months writing a perfect script that maybe we couldn't do, that maybe we didn't have the money for, that maybe COVID restrictions wouldn't allow, instead, the first thing I did is I got on a call with my producer and my special effects person and my stunt person and all the creative heads of department. And I said, what's the coolest thing that we can do? This is our budget. This is our outline. You guys pitch me ideas and we'll base the movie around that. And, you know, and as we start to cast the movie, we start to rewrite it more in that direction. Uma, who plays kind of co-lead against Annie, he lives in Margate. So we're going to shoot in his house because it's free. And that means that we're setting the movie in Margate, which means we should look around. What's in Margate? Oh, there's an abandoned theme park. Well, definitely we should make a scene that takes place in the abandoned theme park. That's how we build these movies out. And there's much more energy and spontaneity to it. And it just also means you get things made and you learn lessons. You're going to learn more from making five movies in 5 years rather than developing a movie for 5 years and then shooting it at the end.
No, I love that advice. And lastly, what are you working on next? What are you currently working on? I think you're in the middle of production at the moment. What can you tell us about your next project?
I can't tell you much, but I'm in the edit suite as we speak for Boogeyman, my Stephen King adaptation, which is going really well. Surprisingly, like, I'm just really happy with how I think it's turned out really beautifully, and it has very little to do with me and a lot to do with our amazing team and our incredible cast, who I think are just going to absolutely astonish people when they see the performances that we've got in this movie. It's a very different kind of movie from Host and Dash Cam, and it's be interesting for people to see this movie against the last two, because the last two movies, like I said, were improvised and shot and edited and released within the space of a few months, whereas this project I've been developing for a couple of years. You know, it's obviously a much bigger budget, so it's a very different approach, a very different language, but I think it's going to be good. Knock on wood.
No, I'm sure it is going to be absolutely incredible, judging it off the two last films alone. Rob, thank you so much for your time this evening. As I said, Dash Cam, absolutely incredible. Go see it in a packed audience. It's out June the 3rd. And yeah, thank you so much for your time, Rob. You take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
And that was our interview there with the lovely Rob Savage. He wasn't savage. He was delightful, I'm glad to say. I was a bit apprehensive. I was like, did your name live up to the title? But he was lovely. He was lovely. And such a great interview you did, Joe.
No, it was very good. Like I say, we're big fans of Host. So very, very excited for Dash Cam. But do you want to tell our lovely listeners all about Dash Cam and what you thought of it?
I will indeed. So this is, like I said, Rob Savage's second feature film. This is his first film, part of a three film deal with Blumhouse, which is excellent. And, you know, he obviously got that deal from Host. So in this film, it does borrow similar themes, I guess, to Host, but it is pretty much a different film altogether. So this is a story of Annie Hardy, and she's a real life musician in real life. She's in a band, but she plays herself in this film. She's in America. She decides to travel over to the UK to meet up with a bandmate of hers, just to escape the COVID restrictions and the lockdowns in America, a little bit crazy. So she decides to come here and she thinks it's going to be better. Don't know why she thought that. So she flies over here to surprise him. He and his partner are not happy to see her. She's very intrusive. She's a little OTT. She's this kind of MAGA Republican, doesn't care for COVID and the virus, and just doesn't understand the hype. She's a conspiracy theorist. She doesn't think, you know, it's all real. The media are making lies, you know, just a rational, sane person, you know. So she's come over to the UK. Anyway, one night she decides to steal his car where he's doing, you know, Uber deliveries. And she gets called to this location. She's told to basically give a ride to this woman named Angela. And the rest of the film is pretty horrific and terrifying. Now, this obviously is super interesting to me, and I was really excited to watch it, especially ahead of its release in cinemas. We were able to get a screening for this just because I'm a big, big fan of Host. I mean, we reviewed it on the show. I remember watching Host in my living room because it was during COVID, wasn't it, the lockdown? And I watched it in the afternoon and it was really sunny outside. So I was like, okay, I'll try and make this scary. I didn't think it was going to be good at all. And I closed the curtains, I shut the door. And oh my goodness, I think a bit of wee came out that day because I was so petrified. It does a brilliant job of raising the tension and the claustrophobia. It's all set on Zoom. And I think the way it effectively manages to use Zoom in a lot of the jump scares and, you know, the kind of building that suspense throughout the film is just terrific. And obviously Blumhouse saw that and was like, wow, Rob Savage, what an incredible up and coming filmmaker. We need to get him on. So I think going from that and going from, for me, what is a 5-star, one of the best horror films I've seen in the last 10 years. I mean, is you know, he had a lot to, you know, he had a lot to live up to. This is a massive expectation for him. And what I will firstly say is Dash Cam is not Host. In the sense of, for me, it's not quite Host in terms of the standard, but also it's not the same film. And I think a lot of the reviews personally have been a bit snobby at this. And I'm seeing at the moment that people are very divided on it. There's an article in the news saying how polarizing Dash Cam is for a lot of reviewers. I just think a lot of people went in with the same expectations and they shouldn't have, because this is more of a studio film. He's given a much bigger budget for this. He's dealing with relatively different cast. It's a different concept. And so it's going to be a slightly different film to Host. He still has those supernatural ties. But one thing I will say about Dash Cam is that it's far more funny than Host. I think it's definitely more comical and humorous, and it's purposely so. In particular with the lead character of Annie Hardy, who, you know, whenever there is a tense, really kind of claustrophobic scene where you're on the edge of your seat, she will find a way to cut the tension and to make you laugh, which I think for a lot of critics have put them off this. For me, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that kind of cutting in and taking you out of it. I think it's a really clever skill that Rob Savage seems to do really well. Not only is it a lot funnier than Host, but I think it's a lot gorier as well. I mean, this is an 18. You know, if you're squeamish, and all I'm going to say is, you know, please don't eat during this film, because it's not just the blood and gore. Every bodily fluid you think of, yeah. He finds a way, Rob, of just putting it in there. Well, even when it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it is really grotesque. I mean, the practical effects in this are incredible, and it is really gory. I think one thing I'll say is, obviously, this is a film where you have a group of characters in a car transporting this person. There's a lot of twists and turns. There's never really a moment where characters ever stand still. I mean, they're constantly on the move. A very different contrast to Host, where it was all set in their houses in lockdown on Zoom. So there are going to be challenges for that. Namely, like I said, the film, I think, has a very fine line between being funny and being able to contrast the horror with the humor. And at times it doesn't quite work. And I think the character of Annie Hardy, although I really enjoyed her, I think for a lot of people, they're going to find her really irritating to watch, because she just finds a way of just kind of undercutting the tension. And, you know, for me, I think, like I said, it's a very different film to the Host. I really enjoyed it. I got a lot out of it. It's very short. I mean, it's not much longer than Host, I would say. Probably about, it's like 1 hour and 5, 1 hour and 10. And it flew by. And I watched this at home and I was just absolutely gripped on the edge of my seat. I had no idea tonally where it was going to go. And I think that's very rare for a horror film to do that to me, because, like I said, it does flip between a comedy and into those horror elements. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I just can't wait to see what Rob does next, really. And I do think he's pushing boundaries. I think he's, you know, subverting our expectations a lot with his films. And that's what he should do, you know. So all I'm going to say is, go in with a fresh mind. Don't expect Host totally. I think there are elements of Host in here, but just enjoy it for what it is. But yeah, what did you think, mate?
Yeah, well, obviously we talked about Top Gun earlier on being a bit of a roller coaster ride. This is an absolute roller coaster ride as well. You're absolutely right. You just don't know where this film is going. And when we're introduced to the hero of the film, Annie, who is just obnoxious and just, yeah, like you said, a MAGA hat wearing, you know, anti-vaxxer more than likely. It's really sort of takes you off guard, because you're like, this is the person that I'm supposed to be invested in and want to survive this horror film. So, yeah, I had no idea where it was going, and it did a great job of constantly going down different roads. You think you know what's happening, and then something else will happen and change your view and change the whole film completely. I think it's just incredible what he has done over the COVID period. You know, he's made two, you know, very well-made horror films with probably, you know, not a lot of the same tools that you would get not in COVID times. And I think, you know, out of everything which many filmmakers have tried to make COVID-era movies and failed miserably, Michael Bay, for example. But, you know, he has done incredible in coming up with these ideas, especially with Host, you know. I mean, taking something that we're familiar with, and I guess using the whole experience of COVID to, like, further that eeriness and further that horror aspect of it, I guess, you know, like you said, in this, it's in lockdown London, lockdown UK, and there's something even more eerie about that, you know, the fact that there aren't many people around because of lockdown and things like that. So I think he's done an incredible job of, you know, using this as a jumping point to make these movies. It is terrifying. It is gross out. I was freaking out a lot through it. Again, even just watching it on the television, it was an incredible sort of experience. I think it would be even more so in a crowd packed full of people. I mean, go see it on a Friday night at 8 o'clock with as many people as possible, as many mates as possible, and guaranteed you will have an amazing experience up there with, you know, when Paranormal Activity came out for the first time. And those films were just amazing sort of horror experiences. So, yeah, you're right. You know, he's an incredible prospect of a director. I can't wait to see what he does next, whether it'll be the same sort of found footage style or whether he'll do something completely different. But wherever he does, you know, we will definitely be paying very close attention because he's 2 for 2 at the moment. So loved it. Proper thrill ride. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done, Rob. I mean, 3 for 3, maybe next time we'll have a little turkey. Is that what they call in sport, a turkey? I don't know.
A turkey?
A turkey. It's like that. That's it. That's in bowling, isn't it? When you get 3 strikes in a row. Oh, I don't know. I'm not sporty. Come on, people.
I know.
We like Eurovision. Yeah. We're all about Eurovision, baby. Yeah. Again, a big thank you to Rob Savage. And Dashcam is in cinemas from June 3rd. Finally, now it's the moment we all wait for. You know, everyone's on tender hooks. They're a little bit getting their appetite going. It's time for our usual segment of Two Truths and a Lie. Okay, Joey. Just want to remind everyone at home that the last time we did this game, Joe, were you successful? I don't know.
No, so I'd had a good running streak and then lost the last one. So I've got to redeem myself again this time.
You really do. It was really embarrassing. And I think we did get a lot of messages being like, you know, is he ever going to get it? And I just kept saying, listen, I said, I'm trying my best. I'm trying my best, okay? But you're going to get this one. I know it. I've got a good feeling. So for those of you who have not listened to our show before, Two Truths and a Lie, I'm going to give Joe 3 facts based on this week's 3 new releases. 2 are true and 1 is a lie. And all Joe needs to tell me is which is the lie. Are you ready, Joe?
Let's go. Come on.
Let's go. Come on. Just imagine you're ripped like Tom Cruise.
I know.
Yeah.
I wish.
Okay. So, fact one. Andy Samberg, who voices Dale, wanted Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers to be PG-13 to include more crude humor, but Disney refused and gave it a PG. Okay. That's fact one. Fact two. The shirtless beach football montage in Top Gun, Maverick, had to be shot twice, because Tom Cruise did not find the first version good enough. The reshoot placed additional pressure on the actors to get their ripped bodies back to reshoot the scene. Getting ripped, baby. Oh, yeah. I mean, he'd just look at me and be like, you're not in this scene. You got to go. All right. Fact 3. Last one. The entirety of Dashcam was shot on an iPhone 11.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, so the Tom Cruise one and Top Gun, I could definitely see it being true, only because that scene, very weird, that sequence. Like, basically, towards the end of the sequence, this isn't a spoiler, but Tom Cruise is sat on a chair, and then they have John Hamm come over. Oh. And, like, clearly they're in different locations because, like, they have John Hamm walking off in the background, but it's clearly, like, green screen and Tom Cruise isn't in the same place. That's what it felt like anyway. So I reckon that is true. And Tom Cruise is fussy. Andy Samberg? PG-13 wanting it cruder? See, between that or the iPhone, I think the Andy Samberg one is the lie.
Well, Joe, you know, you had to redeem yourself this week. You know, we don't want a pattern of failure on this segment, but you've managed to do that. Congratulations. It's correct. Well done.
Yes. Because I thought the iPhone 11.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was between those two, but I thought that probably was an obvious one for me to go for. So I went for the one which wasn't obvious for me to go for, and it paid off.
Good mind games. Can I just also point out, I don't know whether it's an iPhone 11. I just thought it sounded more exciting than just saying iPhone. So, but it was shot on an iPhone. And because I own an iPhone 11 and I imagine myself being in the film, I've said iPhone 11. Okay, so maybe Rob can confirm that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it was filmed on a Motorola Razr. I mean, who knows?
There are other phones available.
Available, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's what I want to see up in the big screen. Pixelated quality, that's what I want to see.
100%. Well, I'm happy with that.
Good. You can sleep happy tonight, can't you?
I will. Straight after this.
well done, mate. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. A big thank you to our guest this week, Rob Savage, for speaking to us about Dashcam. And don't forget, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook under the Dan and Joe Film Show. You can also catch us on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. That's at DJ Film Show. And you can catch all of our old episodes on all good podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Mixcloud. But from both of us, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
God save the Queen.